Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing it doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yo. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo,
and welcome to another stirring edition of Naked Soma's Eye Contact Radio Hour. Pleased to meet you. Hope you guessed my name and you're not voting for McCain.
Yeah.
I practiced that one in the car.
That's good.
Oh, my God. Oh, actually, that's going to be the topic tonight, a lot of the spirituality stuff. so there you go. I got right into it. Okay, I need to find a nice, cool rock to put my head against while the storm rages around me. I can't do it anymore. It has to stop. Okay, my Mets are out of the playoffs. I have to suffer through that enough. The Giants are undefeated, and the eco is causing all kinds of problems. You know, in my little world.
My computer's
actually
problems?
Yeah, it's true. My computer's actually fixed. You know, I actually had a good idea this morning. It took all night to get the noodles cooked, but there they are. Might talk about that for a minute. You know. But the country is having a neurotic meltdown.
Yep.
I don't understand it. Maybe because I'm so religious, I should understand it because I know what's in the country now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you saw that movie, of course, separate from me, with the Rexo.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Really pissed me off. Yeah, because we like to watch these movies together, because then we know what the hell we're going to say when we get on the air. But it didn't, you know, the movie, I missed the first 10 minutes, but, you know.
Yeah, well, if I was with you, I would have missed the first 10 minutes, too, but I saw it.
There you go. Okay, well, then maybe you can cover me here. But for the most part, what we're going to get into tonight is sort of how a lot of the issues in the campaign actually are circling around this is the non-separation of church and state, which is now become to the point now where it's almost every day you're going to hear something that has to do with this topic as we get closer to the election, because they have made it sort of almost like a central theme. For the most part, this country is run by the almighty dollar, right? Which is now on one knee. it's walking up the hill to Calgary here. And so on those little greenbacks is a little phrase, "In God we trust." You know, all others must bring evidence, right?
Yeah.
And so,
which was not supposed to be there. It was put there very late.
But there's a multi-billion-dollar industry that we have been able to scratch a couple hundred grand from over the last, you know, couple of decades, I guess, the two of us combined. There's a big, big cash cow out there that is fed by this notion of sort of separating spirituality from religion and calling it New Age. And we openly hate on it. I have a DVD of The Secret here that every once in a while I kick. I did meet a lot of the people in the Bleep movement. What?
I couldn't even have that in my house. I would. Ugh.
No, I keep it around. I whisper to it. And the other thing is I actually met a lot of people involved in the behind the scenes at the What the Bleep movement, and really for a while thought that they had you know, something cooking over there. And as it was typically demonstrated to me in the last 10 years, what I thought it was is not what I thought it was. After further review, no, they're just trying to make money. And things like Ramtha come up with that completely took it out to sea. And if you're, you know, even a casual archiver of the show, because we have no live listeners, of course, all our listeners are basically operating out of sync with the 9 p.m. hour. So if you are listening live, you're a rare bird, please go to the chat room and let us know you're there. We'd love to know who the live listener is. Oh, yeah, someone open up a window. Yeah, open up the chat room.
All right, here it comes.
Yeah. And notice the influx of sapes as they all come running into chat with you.
Well, yeah, it happens.
Nigeria, please.
Oh, God. Don't get me started.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we wanted to take a look at this because, you know, here we are on the eve of the Day of Atonement, you know.
Yes.
And we had Jewish New Year was last week, mm-hmm. right, Rosh Hashanah?
Yes.
Right? And I think Ramadan is winding down over there.
Yeah, that's done. That's done.
Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, the Italians have Columbus Day on Monday, which is being contested now because apparently Columbus had a couple of slaves on a couple of those ships.
Well, you know, if you guys are into fireworks, they have them in Harrison for Columbus Day every year. We don't care.
Harrison, New York, yeah. For those listening in Zimbabwe, you won't be able to make it, but there'll be some fireworks on Monday. And maybe some good cold cuts, too.
Yeah, they'll actually do them over the weekend. I think it's on Saturday night.
Yeah,
they're better than most of the 4th of July ones I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, I lived in Harrison for several years, and I did enjoy the festivities on the Columbus Day weekend. It is an Italian fiesta that really, to me, signifies the beginning of the fall, more
mm-hmm.
so than Labor Day. The indigestion you get afterwards, after you've had a couple of peppers and sausages, you know,
right.
sandwiches. Good sandwiches, though.
Of
good
course.
For all. Look, you get your nitrates on Monday. Celebrate your Italian heritage. You know. But after we get through that, then we get into some of the woo holidays, like Halloween.
Ah, Samhain, my favorite.
Yes. Why don't you give us the pagan version of that real quick before we get into the interview segment of our program.
Well, that is our New Year. That is
the pagan New Year. Okay.
That is the Earth-based religion New Year, and basically what we do is we figure out what we want to do for the year, kind of like, you know, New Year's resolutions, but not New Year's resolutions, just kind of goals and objectives for the year, and we do some sort of ritual to put them in place so that we're focused on them, and hopefully we follow through.
Yeah, and for most other Americans, it's an excuse to eat a lot of sugar and throw eggs and get drunk.
Yeah, we don't engage.
So we act paganesque,
right?
In terms of the perception of the modern pagan, you know.
Yes, actually.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did that ever work out with the whole thing with burying the soldiers with the pagan symbol
I think that was approved.
It was approved.
Yeah,
okay.
For at least some people, I mean, that was a big, that was years of BS. Imagine, I mean, come on, who is the government to tell others what is an appropriate religious symbol and what is not? Can you people get over yourselves?
Yes. Actually, I meant to hit this one.
You filthy criminals.
Yeah, that's a little bit better than the boing,
yeah.
But
yeah. Oh,
maybe we'll use that later.
Doji's coming up. Yeah, we might use that later. Yeah. So anyway, this movie Religious Bill Maher made, and the premise of it is that organized religion, as an oxymoron, is basically a container of all mental illness in the world, and it has caused more wars, it is sacrificed more lives in one way or another, and it has led to, as he says at the end of the movie, sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, if you want to use that word, where we might all kill each other over this whole thing called God. So we called in an expert, the lovely and talented Penny Cohn, who's the author of Personal Kabbalah, and we kind of kicked this sacred cow around for half an hour, so we're going to look at that in a couple of minutes. You know, but there's a lot of other things going on. These holidays come up, and I'm really not sure where it started. Maybe I'm like a little senile here. I'm not sure where it started, where the Jewish holidays, now public schools are closed, Catholic schools, I guess, will be open tomorrow.
Yep, wide open.
Wide open, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, when it is just a Christian holiday, like some of the lesser holidays,
uh-huh.
the reverse isn't true. So, you know, the Judeo-Christian thing, it seems to have a little seesaw going on there, and I it's never quite been explained to me, but, you know, I think for the most part, if you watch the movie, I mean, like, the date of Christmas, completely made up. You know,
of course it is. Of course it is.
Jesus myth completely made up. What?
You know why they picked that date, right? Because that was the pagan holiday of Yule.
Right.
All Christian holy days are based on pagan ones because they tried to convert the pagans who were doing nothing. They weren't bothering anybody. They weren't blowing anybody up. They were having sex, eating and drinking and having fun. But now... They couldn't do that anymore.
Well, sure. We live in a country where the Puritans came to escape persecution because they pissed everybody else off.
Yep, and then they persecuted everyone else.
Yes, and then they began to persecute everybody else. So, you know, that's why, you know, most of your holidays, your tried and true ones, except maybe Super Bowl Sunday, are piggybacking on some pagan-esque type of a tradition, which you notice they're around, you know, the seasons and around certain lunar events, and
right.
I have to do a lot with agriculture, too, and things like that.
That's
but
right.
We don't want to talk about that, because to talk about that would be to get closer to, well, the truth. And
we love
our fiction in this country. So, you know, we're going to explore that a little bit with Penny here, and then we'll come back and make it all topical-like with the economy basically bending over. We have a surprise next week. We'll be doing a SomaCast of the debate live here on Block Talk Radio. So watch for that as we profile the two candidates, the Philo and the XO, as they duel to the finish next Wednesday at Hofstra University out in Uniondale, Long Island there.
It's too bad we couldn't, you know, get ourselves in there.
I would love to be on site, you know, with the cell phone network. My luck is I'll get in, I'll have a great seat, battery low, and I'll be sitting there blank face with no ability to talk. That'll be my life.
Yeah,
I think I'm gonna stay up here on my perch here in Larchmont, beautiful downtown Larchmont, which is not as chipper as it used to be the last couple of weeks. With all these Wall Street guys walking off with a new a-hole. So anyway. On that note, we will segue to our interview that we had to record yesterday with Penny, and we may at certain points interject or talk over it or completely ignore it, but you're welcome to listen to and enjoy yourself.
Right. Now
right
we can't
with,
pause it.
No, we can't. No. We can talk over it, though.
We can talk over it, but we can't
That's
pause
right.
it.
No, yeah. we might do that. Or we might just, you know, enjoy it with you,
That's
so
right.
to speak. Well, all right. Without further ado, Penny, come.
Here we go. It takes a second to start up, but
she's not the one from Fox 5 News.
No. No.
Okay, joining us tonight, whenever you're listening on Naked Soma, is the one and only Penny Cohen, author of Personal Kabbalah. Welcome to the show, Penny.
Thank you. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Okay. Well, I want to press a vow here. We're all basically moving to the the existential edge as the world continues to melt down. I think Professor Val was just telling me that, was it Iceland or Greenland has no more money?
Iceland, yeah.
Okay, so we've taken them off the map. So as we're sort of pulling up this big blanket of uncertainty around our shoulders here, people are, you know, naturally turning to some of the kickstands of life, one of them being their faith. And... as someone who understands faith from a different perspective, how do you deal with, personally, how do you deal with doubt that's this overarching when it becomes so omnipresent? Is it something that you have a practice for, or you have a way of relating it that you can share with the audience?
So what you're asking is, do I believe in faith, or faith and trust? Is that what you're talking about, or what is faith?
Well, let's get your definition first. How would you define faith?
Well, faith. I guess the best way to put it is that I had a client who said she had a faith in God, However, she couldn't trust in God because she didn't feel worthy of it. And I asked, if you believed in a loving God, what would that be like? And she said, a loving God is someone who watches over you, protects you, and is always there for you. And I can't trust that. And I can't trust that either. People say when they have faith in God. And what does that really mean? And the reality is that I believe God is the elements of fire, air, water, and earth, and that we can harness and direct the energies. So what I trust in is myself. And the energies I'm talking about, there are energies of love, wisdom, beauty, and we can harness and direct those energies. So when we talk about faith, I talk about more trust in myself to align with these energies. And when we align with these energies, we actually feel the presence of love within us, and that's what I believe God is.
Well, that's a good start, because we'll bounce from there to one of my favorite topics, Mother Teresa's moment of doubt. You know, it came out after her death, naturally. It would have ruined the image if she was like, you know, I really have had a kind of men's relationship with my creator. but it came out that she suffered from chronic spiritual doubt. And to me, that authenticates her faith to have both, because it's supposed to be a waveform. If you listen to the show for more than 5 seconds, everything's opposite is complementary. And so talk about that in terms of someone moving through, you know, say they work for Merrill Lynch or one of these companies, and they're looking out the window late at night now, and they're going, you know, this is kind of crappy. And they're turning to their, well, maybe the faith they practice, or maybe they're turning to this more of an experiential manifestation of faith that you're talking about. How do they reconcile that with, you know, the doubt's going to be there, almost to sort of balance it in a way, and how do they use that doubt as a fuel to go through it and say, okay, because a lot of the people that you see will say, God's testing me, or God's challenging my faith, and this cross I bear, and they give you this story about it that almost seems to pedestalize the negative stuff to make it seem like, you know, they're being singled out for some kind of a special journey here because they've had this, you know, unforeseen, experience lap into their life. So talk about that. How do you reconcile the sort of the inevitability of going through some type of spiritual doubt with the sort of persistence it takes to live a life of faith?
Well, again, you're talking about a God that rewards and punishes, and God's testing
mm-hmm.
us. God does test. I believe in cause and effect. We're the cause, and what comes back is what we're putting out. And what we put out in thoughts, feelings, beliefs is what comes back. I mean, we can think of making the multi-millions, but if we have fear of getting it, or doubts about ourselves. The doubt is about ourselves, not anything outside ourselves that's going to reward and punish. If we have doubts, then what will come back is more situations and people that create more doubt. And so what I believe we get is lessons of what we need to learn to feel loving and love within ourselves. And everything that happens to us is an indication. I think 9/11, I think the market today is showing that maybe there's a little more greed than there should be. Or maybe we need to take care of others more. Or maybe we have to get our values straighter than they are. And I think it's a lesson for each one of us to learn how to live with love and peace within ourselves. And we do that by letting go constantly of fear, doubt, and anxiety. And when we let go of this fear, doubt, and anxiety, we feel present, as Eckhart Tolle in his book, A New Earth, talks about the power of now, living in the present. And when we live in the present, we experience the presence of love, creativity, God, if you want to call it that, higher consciousness, higher self, whatever you want to call that. We feel that love, we feel confidence, we feel secure without needing a lot of money. Of course, money helps, and there's nothing wrong with having money by all means. However, we have that sense of confidence within ourselves.
Now, maybe this is something we could kind of bounce off you and Professor Val here, because psychology comes into this a little bit. We all saw the movie Religious the last couple of days, Bill Maher's movie. And one of the concepts that he took and kind of unpacked a little bit is this notion of sort of a spiritual morality, that because I'm spiritual, I'm morally on a high ground compared to you. And you, the secular person who's the atheist, doesn't believe in God, is somehow, you know, you're an elitist and you're too intellectual, and for some reason I'm closer to, you know, the source than you are. And it's that association of living a spiritual life automatically equates to living a higher moral life, when you see so many so-called spiritual leaders doing a lot of weird things. And so just how do you reconcile that, where you're saying that, okay, we're going to get into the moment, it seems like it's a very internal process. So first, Professor Val, psychologically, is there a sort of a get-out-of-jail-free card by being able to sort of ascribe every nuance of every experience to some other, like God did this or the devil made me do that, that sort of polarity that goes on within most traditions? And then we'll see, we'll take your answer and see how we can play that off what Penny just said.
Yeah, I think people use it as an excuse or a reason for different things. Either they don't want to take responsibility for something that they did or didn't do, or they just don't have an answer for something. They can't process something that happened, so they just, you know, give you one of those lame things like, oh, you just leave it in God's hands and he'll take care of it. I hate that. I actually heard a woman whose family was starving say she wasn't going to go get a job because God would take care of them, and it made me want to choke her.
Yeah, like I said, there's a give up there. There's a surrender to the higher power, so to speak, in one sense. And then there's the flat out, I'm giving up all responsibility completely to this. And so, you know, Penny, talk about that. When someone goes through a spiritual transformation, they're dealing with something greater than themselves. But I think at some point, they sort of let go of the string of the kite, and they're just kind of a leaf in the wind to it. And a lot of these systems have ceilings, you know, these belief systems that these traditions people practice. So how do you take that message of let go, let God, in the general sense, and take the sort of the rituals and all the practices out of it, and make it personal, make it internal, make it so that it's customized to you and your life?
Well, I believe that there's a higher self, and the higher self is God, meaning my highest loving, creative, passionate self. I talk about surrender. I talk about surrendering what I call my emotional charges. There's constriction in the body when we have fear, when we have guilt, when we have shame, in different parts of the body, actually. And the surrender is surrendering those charges, letting them go and opening to love. And I believe that's what spirituality, that's what God is. I believe God is love. You're not surrendering to some deity. You're not surrendering to even anything beyond yourself. Actually, I mean, we talk about a greater power, but there's oneness. And I believe it or not, that we each individually are the one. And what I mean by that is, I'm the one looking at you, so I'm observing you. I'm also perceiving what you might be thinking of me and perceiving what I'm thinking of you, and I'm the one now knowing you. So I'm putting out that information now. I'm the cause, and what comes back is more situation to what I'm perceiving. Now, when I let go of any beliefs and live totally in the now, I'm in a state of surrender. Now, what I'm surrendering to is my intention. In other words, I set an intention for what I want and let go of tension. And so I'm surrendering to my higher self and the intention of what I want to accomplish. Now, when you talk about a spiritual morality and that people reaching a higher level of consciousness, those aren't spiritual people if they think they're higher than anybody else. Because true spirituality is accepting everybody for who they are. And because, you know, there's a lot of people in the New Age movement who think because they experience ESP and mental telepathy and they can heal people, they think they're spiritual. But their individual lives are in chaos because they don't know themselves. And I believe true spirituality is knowing yourself. And when you know...
This came up in that movie. Yeah, I'm just saying, this came up in the movie as he interviewed some of these leaders where three or four times, I remember during the course of Bill Maher's movie, he flat out asked them, isn't that a pretty harsh judgment to make about a bunch of people you don't know, whether it was, you know, gay people or whether it was, you know, the Muslim community dealing with other religions. It just seems like there's a huge difference between the perspective of backing a religion and the perspective of backing one's personal spirituality. So maybe that's what you're trying to say here, is that the non-judgment, the sort of transcendent state that you're talking about isn't owned by any one spiritual practice.
Exactly. I believe that we are all one, and we have the ability to reach and access this state of unconditional love and wisdom. How we do it, there are many different paths, and I don't believe there's any one right path. It's whatever works. It could be through Buddhism, through Hinduism, through shamanism, through Kabbalah. There are a lot of different paths, just through meditating. The truth is, I think the challenge is for each person to have that personal connection with love.
Oh, this is, again, this gets into that sort of the almost kind of the continuum, if you will, from maybe you can kind of make the distinctions for us between what's mysticism, what's superstition, what's myth, and what's taboo within the cultural perspective, because, you know, Kabbalah has become popularized more in the last 15, 20 years. The euphemism is Jewish mysticism. That seems like esoteric stuff that only a certain members of the community are allowed to know, and it's handed down in a very cryptic way, and as Val and I have speculated, because the rest of the community is too stupid to handle it,
mm-hmm.
and they would screw it up.
Well,
and as you've seen,
reality is, I mean, what happened was it was a tradition that went underground because some people were using it in detrimental ways. And what I mean by that is that there are higher forces. There's energy, a lot of energy out there, positive and negative. And we can reach this energy and use it in very destructive ways. And there were some people who were using it to turn brass into gold, and others who were using it to destroy other countries. And so, and there's a folk tale of four rabbis who tried to reach paradise. One became a heretic, one died, and one went crazy. The only one who survived was Rabbi Akiva, and that's because he was very balanced, steeped in the traditions of the Old Testament, married, and lived a balanced life. Now, there are some people who just sit and meditate on these high energies, but their bodies aren't ready to receive them. And that's why there is a thing in Kabbalah saying you could go crazy if you're not studying it in a balanced way. Now, true mysticism, however, is the pursuit of communion or awareness of ultimate reality. There's nothing mystical about it.
Wow.
It's communion of ultimate reality. It's sensing what is. And when we sense the energies, there's no mysticism about it. It's real. When you watch the correlation between what you think and what happens, or how you feel and what happens, there's no mysticism there. It's a reality. It's a sense of knowing.
So this is like the sort of the stereotypical epiphany or the aha experience, the aha moment where you get sort of a almost like you say, this kind of coalescence of a lot of things, and then all of a sudden it's eureka, and you're running out of the bathtub naked like Archimedes, that kind of thing?
I don't know if you go out of the bathroom naked outside anyway.
What for him?
It's a sense of certainty that you get.
You imagine if Archimedes was now? Can you imagine for a second Archimedes in the bathtub, some old man with a beard running down the street naked thinking he's discovered some kind of, you know, mystical law because he sat down in the bathtub and the water went up? Law of displacement?
You go after him, Mark.
Yeah, it's good, though. But I'm just saying, this is what you're saying, is that when you go, it's almost like going south to end up going north. When you go into the unknown and you go into this sort of undefined turf, and you discover something, you sort of, you know, Marco Polo it and bring it back to the world here, the world treats you like an outsider. The world treats you like they treated Galileo. The world treats you like they treated Columbus. They don't treat you like, you know, let's just use a contemporary term. They don't treat you like a liberator when you come back with this news that everything that they thought was real is not real.
I haven't had that experience, quite frankly, and I think my challenge has been to work on explaining it in a practical way so people could understand it, meaning my ex-husband, who considered himself an atheist, I could never use the word God with him, but I could say to him, have you ever experienced a time where you were really feeling joy and love and felt like things came to you easily and effortlessly? Oh, absolutely, he said. I said, well, that's what I think of as being in the flow. And you can explain that flow as many things. You can explain it as consciousness, pure awareness, God, inner self, higher self. He says, just as long as you don't use the word God, I think we're talking about the same thing.
And again, that word God is a trigger word. I've actually used that with clients on the old body variability here, just putting up key words and seeing how their body responds. And when you say God to someone who's had a negative experience with religion, not necessarily spirituality, but, you know, the old cafeteria Catholics that wander in here, or, you know, they've been basically, they've been disillusioned by religion rather than elevated up. And you say the word God, or they say the word God in their head, and their body reacts physiologically.
And absolutely, and that's why before I work with a client, I have to see where they're coming from regarding that word. And then I explain actually where I'm coming from, that the word God to me means a grand organizing design. And I believe there is a system to the universe. There is a system and probably a plan to the universe. And the way I describe that to people is, look at the stars and planets and constellation and the way the Earth revolves around the sun. If there wasn't a system and plan, this wouldn't be in balance.
Well, that gets into the cosmology of God, and that gets into much more of how, like, astronomy and astrology got related, and then you get into things like, you know, the constellations and the archetypes and how all these things kind of combine. So as we kind of wind down here, do you see a correlation between these different spiritual traditions along the lines of things like that, that have been sort of rooted in psychology, like, you know, archetypal images and things like the cross and the circle and all these things that basically all the major religions use to communicate these abstract things, some of them cosmological, some of them mystical, that you see that, just like in Bill Maher's movie, that the story of Christ has been repeated in Egyptian mythology and other traditions of having the the Savior and the resurrection of the dead. All these things seem to be sort of on a loop through human history. So do you find that?
Kabbalists have a diagram called the Tree of Life, which is basically 10 circles with lines in between. And each circle and each line represents a different level of energy, a different universal law of nature, and a different level of consciousness. And this diagram actually corresponds with the seven sacraments of Christianity, the chakra system in Buddhism, Jungian archetypes, the Christian mystics, the patriarchs in the Bible. I actually did a workshop a year ago with my ex-husband, who's the former CFO of RJR Nabisco, and we were able to put the steps to success in business onto this Tree of Life. Erickson's stages of development fit onto it. You can outline an organizational chart because it represents the flows of energies in the universe. And so everything corresponds to this diagram, and that's why I became so interested in it. And from a personal perspective, the varying levels of consciousness is a sensory perception of the body, a personal foundation of understanding that there is a higher self, and acceptance of what is, self-mastery of your emotions, opening up to compassion, and then strength and discipline, loving kindness and mercy. Then there's a sense of inner knowing and spirit, then understanding, wisdom, and oneness.
All right, well, I guess taking that as kind of our turn for home here, just to clear something up, people are facing a lot of adversity these days, for a lot of different reasons, not just related to the markets, but just trying to get through the day. Sometimes when I look at people's lives around me, I see a lot of lack of design, lack of orientation to things you just said. And what can you clear up for them in terms of what do you think is the major stumbling block or the thing that they sort of carry that prevents them from accessing the things you're saying, so that they can appreciate this? This design you're talking about, because a lot of people will deny that there's a design. They think it's all random, and somehow they think that helps them. So what can you, I mean, do not rip the belief out of their head.
Well, I mean, what stops us from feeling this inner peace and love is judgments, criticisms, self-doubt, fear, guilt, anxiety, inability to forgive, holding grudges and resentments, not having a balanced body, addictions. I think we're all craving this sense of unconditional love, and we don't know how to get it. And so we numb ourselves instead of opening ourselves up. We're afraid to go into the pain of feeling our feelings. Instead, we block our feelings, and when we're no longer feeling, that's when we look for drugs, alcohol, shopping, gambling, and whatever else. Instead of really feeling the feelings, accepting them, honoring them, and even sending love to them, rather than holding on to the negative voices in our head, it's letting go of the conditioning. When you let go of the conditioning of the old voices in our heads and the way we related in childhood to parents, siblings, and friends, that's when we let go of the conditioning, we open to unconditional love. And unconditional...
No pain, no gain.
No gain. Or, you
no
know...
No pain,
they,
no gain.
They say fake it till you make it. I say feel it till you heal it.
All right, then. We have several bumper stickers on the way out today. But, all right, Penny, well, thanks for sharing your thoughts. This is PennyCohen.com. You can check out her book, Personal Kabbalah, up there. And any questions or any comments, be sure to direct them to us, and we'll forward them over to Penny. And thanks for joining us here and clearing up some things for us on Naked Soma, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Penny.
Pleasure. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
Be well. Take care.
And we're back.
There it is.
A scintillating interview, nonetheless.
Yeah, she's an interesting lady.
Turned over many rocks.
Yes.
Yes. And, you know, for the most part, you know, what Penny was trying to say in her very polite and much, much more mature way than we would say it is, you're on your own, suckers.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you lean on traditional stuff, and the more you lean on rituals, and the more you lean on ceremony, and the more you lean on sort of that window dressing that religions use to govern massive amounts of people, you end up with a lot of emptiness, a lot of disillusionment.
Mm-hmm.
And you New Age sapes, Charlie, out there, going to Candy Mountain right now, you're the worst. You're the worst of them all, you secret sapes.
Uh-huh.
And not because you're just so flat out dead wrong. It's because you have no ears on the sides of your heads. You know, because most of you are, you know, ex-whatever from another form of religion. And, you know, the James Twymans of the world, all these guys. And I hate to say, you know, to critique the violet, what the heck, the indigo movement, like in purple, the purple people, you know, but they're just in the same soup too. They have an explanation for something that's beyond their understanding, and when you dig a little deep and try to get some actual, like, information about it, they do the same thing. They get all fluffy. How do you know it's an indigo child? Well, you just know they have red hair, and they skip and frolic around and talk to themselves, and okay. So, you know, when you get into the actual neurobiology of this, yeah, the visual motor template of the human being was completely altered in the 80s, but not because of the indigos coming from Remulon or whatever they come from.
Uh-huh.
Is because we stuck our eyeballs in front of fast-moving technology for a generation, so the brain adapted and changed an allele, and it created a difference in the way serotonin and dopamine were mapped in early development. So you got precocious visual kids that then became dyslexic, Asperger-y, you know, and whatnot. And then we drugged the crap out of them in the land of the free. You know. So all you archivers, if you're still with us, if you haven't snoozed off and, you know, waking up drooling on your keyboard somewhere, you know, we're going to get into this a little more next week as we somacast the debate. But first, I wanted to play a couple of clips if I could, if I can get over there. You think having half an hour free time?
One.
Oh, well,
yeah,
you have a clip? Okay, you do that and I'll get the other one because I want to play some clips from Religious here.
Yeah, I'm going to play this one because this one pissed me off. All right. For anybody who watched the debate the other night, we have this fabulous little clip for you.
Some people watched it, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, my friends, I know you grow a little weary of this back and forth. It was an energy bill on the net, loaded down with goodies, billions for the oil companies. And it was sponsored by Bush and Cheney. You know who voted for it? Might never know. That one. You know who voted against it? Me.
That one. We refer to our running mate, that one.
Is that running mate? Is your opponent?
Yeah, you know what I mean. I'm looking at his picture on TV right now. I'm in two places at once, as you know. That pissed me off so much, but you know what I really love is the website that you sent me.
Yes.
It's, that108.com?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the address. You guys have to go to that. If you want to see some let me turn it around and beat you in the face with that stuff, check out that website. That is so good. Damn, why can't those guys work for us? We get some marketing done, I'll tell you.
For the most part, it actually plays itself out. But anyway, here's a little interview I just pulled up on YouTube with Bill Maher on the View, talking about Sarah Palin. It should be funny.
Been talking, and we still don't know what she's about.
You
I think
see
don't.
Katie Couric's
I
interview?
Saw Katie Couric,
she
but
must
I
have
think
thought it was a cooking thing. Segment. I mean,
I still think don't underestimate Sarah Palin. I don't think you should.
I've seen her. Are you listening?
I am listening. You don't think she's going to be able to do this with Biden?
No, he's made some gaffes too.
You're not going with an open mind about the debate?
Well, sure, but I've seen her twice try to speak. That's the sentence to nowhere is what comes out of her mouth. If Joe Biden had made some of the comments she made to Katie Couric, we would think he had brain damage.
Joe Cocker had made the comment about Roosevelt in the TV comment,
and you know, and we laughed it off and said, "Oh, that's just Joe Biden."
But don't underestimate, because look at George Bush, the W. He was idiotic in the thing, and they won.
Right.
Dan Quayle, moronic, and they won.
Do you think Dan Quayle is moronic?
Because
moronic. Dan Quayle?
No, no. Are you equating Sarah Palin? And
I'm just saying that when they,
This Republican Party is so cynical. This is the third time in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Bush,
yeah.
Quayle, and now Palin, they have nominated a complete bimbo, which is a man or a woman.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to see how you encase that in
they
your
They are bimbos. Like Dan Quayle, I remember in the debate, they asked him something like, I forget what the issue was, but it was like, what would you do if there was nuclear war, something catastrophic?
Yeah.
And he, of course, you know, started to crap himself, and he had that look in his eye like, and he went, first I would say a prayer. Yeah, that's right. Talk to your imaginary friend while the world is falling down.
I want to ask you actually something, because you said
that would really effectively do something.
Before that George Bush is a religious fanatic like Osama bin Laden, equating the two I think is strange, but why do you feel this way? Just because he believes in God, or because he does pray?
Well, it affects his foreign policy. He says that.
But what about John F. Kennedy? Do you feel the same way about him? Because
he's also been
quoted to say that, you know, I have right here asking his blessing in his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own. FDR used similar comments. Lincoln.
It's a religious country.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike every other civilized Western democracy in the world, this country is still extremely religious because
mm-hmm.
we're young and dumb.
We're religious.
So,
all right, there's a little clip from him on The View. And again, that's his usual shtick. If you listen to Bill at all, but
so
the only other person losing is you. Just making sure.
Bill Maher, host of Real Time with Bill Maher, he's tackling an often taboo subject.
Now, this is his
religion.
I can't stand it. This movie made me so depressed.
Who are you, Bill?
Here we go.
Jesus Christ, man, the second coming of Christ. I am.
Not just because you share the name Jesus.
No, because...
Because you also share the name Miranda. Maybe
right.
Carmen Miranda.
Yeah.
Maybe the second coming of her, you should have fruit on your head. Instead of fruit in your head.
And Bill Maher is with us this morning. Where did you find that guy?
We found that guy in Miami, where he preaches. He claims to have thousands, hundreds of thousands of followers. He probably does.
Yeah.
I mean, he proves that it's just way too easy to start a religion.
There you go. I wanted to talk about your background first.
Sure.
Right? Because your mother was Jewish, your father was Catholic.
Yes.
You were raised Catholic?
Yes.
Until 13 years old?
Well, yes. That's about when my father quit. You know, I did an interview with my mother and my sister. It is in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
My mother gets me my first laughs, and it was great to see it finally in front of an audience in a theater. And, there she is. She didn't want to do it. She was 88 years old.
Right.
And but she did it for me. And I wanted to ask her on camera. I had never asked her these questions.
This must have been what I missed.
How come I didn't find out
that interviewing his mother
that I was half Jewish?
Uh-huh.
They never said anything
to me. My sister, my father, and I went to church every Sunday,
uh-huh.
and catechism, the kids went, and
sure.
my mother never went,
right.
and I never, you know, when something is a routine from the time you're a
right.
infant, you don't question it.
Right.
So I wanted to ask my mother that. I also wanted to ask her, why did Dad stop going to church
sure.
at 13? And she blew me away with the answer, which was that the church outlawed birth control.
Right.
And, of course, I thought, well, my parents had sex twice, like every parent, you know, so my sister and me, and that was it.
Right?
I mean, why would that be something that would involve them?
Right.
So it was interesting, and she really kicks off the movie and sets it in a setting, in a place where people can relate to it,
sure.
even though I had a kind of...
All right, I'm definitely going back for the first 10 minutes now.
Yeah, it was... His mom and him, when they showed pictures of them when they were little, the mom mm-hmm. and him looked so much alike. As she aged, of course, that you know, there was, you know, what happens when you get old.
Yeah, yeah, quick look at her though. She looks a little phyllo. Just a quick look. He's flaming on them. I don't know how she acts in the movie, but
she actually is. Yeah, she's phyllo-ish, but I'm wondering if she's even eco.
What, does he have a sister there?
Yeah.
What's
they look alike too.
Yeah. Mm. Does she say anything?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Well, anyway, the whole premise of Religious is that you have this set of ideas that get kind of, you know, randomly or not so randomly pelted at your brain when your brain is developing, and you internalize them. And then when you're an adult, you sort of get a second look at these things, and you realize it's another device of control. It leaves you with absolutely nothing to really guide you with other than a set of rituals and traditions and holidays that become sort of automated, I guess. And the meaning of them, whatever they were, is gone. Where, as we talked about at the top of the hour, you know, the pagans were doing things, you know, very similar to so-called primitive cultures that had to do with their farming and their, when they would migrate and they would celebrate, they would honor the gods, so to speak. Where we sort of give lip service to a lot of this stuff, and then when the S hits the fan, as has become the cry of the day in the last couple of weeks, now what? Now everyone's turning to this stuff, and that's why I really think that the character issues in the campaign are going to come down to that. They're going to go right back to, not so much that Obama's a terrorist and stuff like that. They've tried that, and it hasn't even got half
the
flagpole.
That failed. That failed.
It failed
yeah.
miserably, except for when Palin does a red meat thing like we saw this afternoon.
She is red meat.
Well, she is basically, like he said, just they've found their bimbo pit bull to just read what's on the cue card and not question it. She has no capacity to think for herself because she's not thinking.
She really is just unbelievable.
Reading the cue cards. Dude, she's like a news reporter like she was, you know, 15 years ago. That's what she is.
Uh-huh.
And she's a news bunny. And you know, Grandpa stands there with his arms in his holsters, waiting to attack, and Cindy becomes like a robot. Just,
his posture?
Well, he's got all kinds of garbage going on from the abuse he suffered, but it's it puts you in a position where you're like you're walking around in the woods and you trip over the root of a tree and you think it's a snake for half a second.
Yeah.
And you kind of put your head forward and your body backward.
Got it.
It's called a withdrawal reflex. Mm-hmm. It's something that you know, that helps form your cervical spine, actually, to get a little technical. But it really is a internalization of fear. Your back stiffens and your head goes forward to kind of see what the heck's going on. And it also indicates that the brainstem isn't working too well. The cerebellum isn't governing the muscles too well. So you're sort of on a lot of muscle memory, which means you're stuck in the past, which is a phylo signature, which should be on the phylo money.
Yeah.
And bring them up and have a shot of McCain with his head over his shoelaces. You know. So that's the kind of stuff we're going to get into next week, looking at. Because this body language stuff that they break down about the candidates is so third person, so horribly superficial. And the spirituality angle that they take, questioning everything from patriotism to your morality to your, you know, the people you hang out with. And meanwhile, in Alaska, you know, Sarah's up there leading the charge of an Alaskan secession group this year. This year! Could you imagine if Joe Biden was leading one in Delaware? Delaware was going to secede? Could you imagine? I'm not an American. I'm an Alaskan. And the husband was, you know, a big, she wrote part of the thing in 2002. It is so unbelievably over the top that this woman ever got to where she is on the ticket. Because I really think the Republicans are, just like with Kerry last time with the Democrats, they're protesting too much. But the difference is, when they swift-voted Kerry 4 years ago, nobody helped him. But here you have these people who are attempting, how you do this, how do you swoop a guy that never was in a war, to smear Obama, and it's going right back at him. It's not sticking. So, but this is what has been sort of the Republican playbook for, like, you know, the more we're saying, the last 20 years or so, is find a willing bimbo to be the running mate, whether it was Quayle or or what do you call it, or Palin here, you know. Well, who else did he mention? He mentioned three of them.
No, I don't remember.
Well, W himself was a bimbo. And they kind of reversed that ticket because they stuck Cheney on the backside of it. And just let him read what's in front of the cards. And he doesn't have the ability to think for himself because he's not in a position to think. He doesn't have any thoughts. He asks her what newspaper she reads. She gets insulted.
Cheney, you know, is the eighth cousin of Obama.
No, come on.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
I mean, I heard some crap today about, you know, there's a connection between Sarah Palin and Princess Diana, too, that she has royal blood in her history, too.
Well, she might have royal blood in her, but...
so much for the soccer mom.
Cheney and
soccer
mom thing. Yeah, no, it's in Cheney's book when they were doing the... I think they did some kind of a family tree or something, and then they were like, oh, crap.
what's up with that? What?
I mean, you can't make it up.
Wow, I don't know what to make of anything anymore. The whole thing is starting to just add up to one big, like, you know, let's play hockey. I think sort of in the parallel universe, nothing. The other thing I was telling the clients tonight was that, you remember about a month ago, everybody was more worried about the storm season. Is that you? God damn it. Yes, it is. I understand.
Who first that?
You're IMing me. I'm talking here. And we were all worried about the storm season. And suddenly that's all gone away, but there's about five or six storms that are supposed to hit the Northeast Quarter in the next maybe 6 or 8 weeks, that if one of them takes out Wall Street, even for a day or two, and there's no power around here, game over. You know? Imagine if they have like even a mini Katrina, like what happened, you know, down in Texas, or some of the floods that happened in the Midwest earlier this year. If we have any kind of hit to the grid on the East Coast between Washington and New York, I mean, that could cause, like, beyond all these things that they're talking about with the terrorism. I mean, so it's funny how Mother Nature might have a vote in the next couple of weeks.
Well, she usually does.
Well, she usually gets the last say anyway.
She's kind of onto, no?
Mm-hmm. Mother Nature, yes. Father Time being more exo.
Mm-hmm.
As we talk our pig Latin that nobody understands. You can go to summerspace.org if you want to figure out what the hell we just said. Or if you're archiving to this point, you deserve to listen to this. This is my little summary of the debates.
That's the trash. Oh, you don't get
trash. It's too low. I can't hear it.
You don't drop that kitchen floor. You ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yakety yak.
Unbelievable. Can't hear it.
Can't hear it. Forget it. You want to sing it?
No. I'm gonna play it again louder.
Go ahead.
You know what? You know what? We got time. You play it. Here. Hello.
What am I playing?
Right here. I'll show you.
All right. You see that?
Here, diagonally.
Connect Four was one of my favorites. I used to kick everyone's
butt. Game of Checkers, yes.
That's
hurry up and play, because the streamers are going to be left.
All right, hang on. Let me see.
My freaking speakers. That's the next thing that has to be fixed with this stupid box from hell.
All right. Well, it's spinning. Here we go.
All right. It's my little
take out the papers,
vignette.
The trash.
There we
that's
go.
No good.
So you don't get no spending cash. If you don't slap that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more. Yakety yak. Go back. Da 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 da.
God.
Well, to play us out here, hopefully this will play. There's nothing I do plays. We will see you next week for the live SomaCast of the debates. Hey, look, it's playing. And here's the boss playing us out, who's playing free concerts for Obama all over the place. And I would like to say to McCain and Palin, as she heads back to Alaska to anonymity, it's going to be a long walk home, sister.
Not if she rides on one of her mooses.
That's true. Galloping
mooses.
Away in a moose. Or take a helicopter and shoots him on the way. All right, everyone, travel light. We will see you next week. Be well.
Above me the same night sky was glowing. In the distance I could see the town where I was born. It's gonna be a